Our guest in this segment of the show is joining us and representing the Napa County Progressive Alliance. His name is Gary Orton, and we're going to meet him here and find out who he is and why he's interested in talking to us about this concept of district elections in the city of Napa. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Barry.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. I can see from your bio that you're a lawyer, and we're not going to hold that against you.
Okay, good. I'm a recovering lawyer.
Where are you from? Where's your education, and how did you end up in Napa?
I was born in Oakland, grew up on the San Francisco Peninsula, went to Cal, and this was during the early 60s, when I went to Hastings College of the Law and got my law degree. Mm-hmm. I think one of my interesting experiences in law school was that I worked in one of the first poverty law offices as a clerk when I was going there in the Fillmore District at that time. It gave me a real interesting concept of what poverty is like and the needs of minority communities. Hmm. From there, I went into the Air Force as a JAG officer, was a captain for 4 years in active duty with lots of interesting assignments. One of my, I would say interesting, my wife at the time would not say so. It was a remote assignment in Korea, on a very small base. I was the chief legal officer at a small base. So got out and then started practicing law on the peninsula. Mm-hmm. Got interested in politics and got elected to the Belmont City Council for 2 terms. Was mayor a couple of times. Lots of regional committees. Taught me a lot about politics. State politics as well as local politics got involved in the Democratic Party at that time. Mm-hmm. But it also taught me something about running for office and what it takes to run for office and how you really have to use the shoe leather, get out there and walk the precincts and meet people. That's the only way to do it.
That's right. Been proven time after time. Yep. Here in Napa.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Lived in Hawaii a little bit too, uh-huh. So learned about diverse communities there. Lived there about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And then you came to Napa.
Then I came to Napa.
Just about, 8 years ago?
Is that what I read? 8, 9 years ago, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. To retire or to be engaged?
Yeah, to be retired, then that didn't turn out too well because I'm engaged in lots of volunteer activities here.
Yeah, very good. So what kind of law practice did you have when you were in private practice?
Mainly a trial practice, a general trial practice. Mm-hmm. It was with a small firm and then as a solo practitioner. But mm-hmm. in the later part of my career, I was also general counsel to 3 special districts in San Mateo County, 3 sanitary districts, and went to their board meetings at night, 3 different ones. So I was out at night a lot counseling boards of directors of the sanitary districts, and mm-hmm. I had to be up on knowledge of municipal law and the Brown Act and good things like that.
Yeah. How did you become engaged and interested in issues of poverty and the poor? You came from Oakland. Mm-hmm. Oakland has been known to have its poverty issues for forever, I guess. Was it living there and growing up in a town like that that made you aware of those things?
Yeah, I really didn't grow up in Oakland. I grew up in the peninsula, but it was a blue-collar community. Grew mm-hmm. up in San Bruno.
Yeah.
And life was different then. I think has gotten me interested in the last certainly 10 years is how this country has changed, how the economy has changed, how people's wages have stagnated. Even though we have, quote, full employment, the jobs aren't that good. I think 40% of working people have less than $400 in savings. They're living day to day. This is a lot different. When I was growing up in the 60s, you could go out and get a job. A good job. You know, people didn't worry about being able to find a job, a good job. Mm-hmm. It's different now. And I worry for my, not so much my kids, but certainly my grandkids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. For many people, you hear that expression all the time. It's not a question of getting work or having work. You can work 18 hours a day if you want. It's making ends meet, even though you're working that much.
And, you know, medical care, what it costs. And mm-hmm. I'm very aware of that. My wife's a retired physician mm-hmm. and certainly aware of the medical system.
Yeah. All right, so let's. Thanks for the background. It's always good to know who people are and where they're coming from. Let's get into this topic, the subject of district voting. When you bring up a thing like this, inevitably you have to explain it to a lot of people. You know, if you were to be out there knocking on doors to campaign for something like this, which I don't think is really happening, is it? Is that?
No.
I don't want to confuse people.
With this issue?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, there's no campaign going on, but no. Using that as a comparison.
And we'll talk about the process a little bit later. But
you know, if you were to, you know, welcome 10 people in the lobby here at the radio station, say I'm going to talk to you about district voting, how do you explain it to people?
Actually, you were doing a pretty good job to begin with in the segue.
Thank you.
Put it this way. We have 435 representatives in Congress. We don't go on, when we go to the ballot box, vote on 435 different seats. We have 53 congressional seats in California. We don't get to vote for all 53 representatives. We only get to vote for one. I say get to. That's good because we know who that person is and the various candidates are. Otherwise, our vote would be diluted, really, with millions of people. We just are concentrated on the people here in Napa. And that's the way the founders thought. That's the way that it naturally is. And actually, the way this new law came about under the Voting Rights, the California Voting Rights Act, it came about in 2002. It made it a lot easier to switch from at-large to district. So you were explaining it very well, and that is that right now the council members do not have to live in a specific district. Mm-hmm. There are no districts. They every 2 years, two are up for election, and everybody in the city votes for the candidates for those two seats. With district elections, districts would be created. And each council person running for that seat would have to live in a particular district, and only the people in that district would vote for the candidates in that district, much the way it is for the congressional seats, for example, in California.
Right. So having come up with the proposal that maybe Napa ought to do things this way, what was the next step? Your organization, Napa County Progressive Alliance, has petitioned the city, is that correct?
Yes, petitioned them under specific provisions of the California Voters Rights Act. And as I was saying before, this act was came about in 2002, basically to improve upon the Federal Civil Rights Act of 1965. Now, let's just go back a little bit further than that. And that's when I was in law school and studying all about this and working in the inner city, if you will, and witnessing all of this. That's when the Civil Rights Act of 65 came about, tumultuous times. It was an outgrowth of the segregationist policies we had in this country, which go back all the way back to Reconstruction. And I think one of the important going a little history lesson, I think we all remember it, learning about the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the Reconstruction Amendments. Let's concentrate on the 15th Amendment. Very simple amendment. Says that the right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. It's not only being denied, it's being abridged. And what does abridged mean? It means weakened. You can't weaken someone's right to vote. Oh, you can give them the right to vote, but if you weaken it and put them in a district where they really don't have a choice or their vote doesn't count very much, that's abridgment. And so that occurred a lot in the South and other places. The Civil Rights Act of 65 started to do something about that. And caused many districts to be reorganized. So that worked for a while. It was not having a great effect some places. So the California legislature passed a law in 2002 to tell cities and districts that if they had at-large elections, sometimes that weakens a minority's vote. And if you could prove that in fact that there was racialized polarization voting, and I'll explain what that is, then the city has to have district elections, or the districts have to have district elections.
So what comes as a natural question when this topic comes up, is there a belief, does your organization believe, do people individually believe, that at-large council members in the present day or in previous councils have not been good representatives of the Latino population, for example? That's the largest contingent of people that are not consistently represented on the city council.
Well, that's one of the things the Act makes clear. It does not have to be any intentional acts whatsoever. It's very, very natural to have racially polarized voting. Let me give you some examples of what we mean by that, the racially polarized voting. Mm-hmm. First of all, Latinos comprise about 40% of Napa's population. Now, some of those people are not able to vote because they're under 18 or they're not citizens. So let me give you some examples. Despite the strong presence in the community, there's been only one Latino member who has been elected to the city council, and that was Alfredo Pedroza in 2012. Two others have run, Jose Hurtado in 2014, who received 75% of the Latino vote, but only 17% of the non-Latino vote, placing him third. And Ricky Hurtado, who ran in 2018, received 53% of the Latino vote, but only 8% of the non-Latino vote, also placing third. Now, nobody's blaming anybody for any of those results, other than the fact is that the Latino voters' votes were diluted because they were in had to vote at large. Instead of having a district, perhaps they would have either been able to elect a Latino, or even if that were not possible, they could have influenced the election. And that's what the statute says, that you don't have to even show that you could you could elect someone. And that's what the federal law required. California loosened that up and said, no, even if by having a district election, you could influence the election, that's good enough. That gives the Latino a little more weight. Mm-hmm. The Latino votes is not abridged, if you will, mm-hmm. as to use the language of right. the 15th Amendment.
We're talking here with Gary Orton. Gary is representing the Napa County Progressive Alliance. This group has come forward to the City Council of Napa with a petition saying that a change to district voting should take place. As far as the actual petition and the request, your group is asking for this change to take place right away in time for upcoming elections?
Actually, the Act has time restrictions in it itself. And by the way, the letter that was prepared, our petition, if you will, was prepared by a demographer and an attorney. So Scott Rafferty is both a demographer and an attorney. And you can see by their conversation already, a lot of this has to do with statistics as to, the voting preferences and how you determine how do we know Latinos voted that, because demography can help us out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of surveys are done. We know what various districts, percentages of people, demographers, that's what they specialize in. So it's, we're presenting these facts to the city council. I think the facts are pretty clear. And to answer your question, the process, the statute also tells us what the process is, what happens. Once this is presented to them, the city council has 45 days to, after receiving the letter, to adopt a resolution of an intent to transition from at-large to district elections. And if they pass that resolution, then they have 90 days in which to adopt an ordinance with the maps. Now, before that, in between the 40, during that 90-day period, they have to have four hearings. Maps can be presented by the public. The city will hire a demographer to start making these maps. There's professionals out there to do that. I would like to back up. Okay, go ahead.
Before you go there, so as you said, 45 days. What if the city council or the city management does not engage in this within that 45-day period? What's next then?
Well, we hope they will. A law was passed recently, I think it was last year, that calls for a collaborative period, so collaboration to go on. The idea is that let's prevent lawsuits. That's not the idea. It's, you know, educating people as to what the law provides and the remedies that can take place naturally. But so litigation is the last thing we want to talk about. It's not necessary. As a matter of fact, when other cities have seen this and seen the demographic facts, they've changed. Since the 2002 California Voting Rights Act, before that, there were 27 cities in California that had district elections. After the passage of that, 100 cities changed. And I don't think there has been any city that did not change once they're presented with the facts. Mm-hmm. Recognized the not only the fairness, and the reason the Progressive Alliance, the Napa County Progressive Alliance, is interested in this is that district elections make it fair for everybody, no matter what their race or ethnic origin. Because from a progressive standpoint, this allows, as I said, I did that shoe leather and walking the precincts. Now I can, with a smaller area, I can get out, I can meet those people, I can communicate with those people. I don't need as much money, I don't have to go to big backers. This is the progressive position as well. So that's one of the reasons we're interested in it, not only racial justice and equity.
Mm-hmm. So again, I didn't mention litigation, but you did. So if there was no action, I'm just gaming out different scenarios. Yeah. If the city of Napa or any other city that's receives a letter like this says, no, we're not interested in district elections. We want to keep at large like we've always had it. Do you feel that the law that you cited is the legal precedent and the basis for a suit that would be successful to compel the city to do this?
Well, that's why I say before you ever send one of these letters, before one of these letters is ever sent, the demographic facts have to be amassed. There's been a lot of research that's already been done. This is not just something that came out of the blue. A lot of research was done to nail down these facts. Mm-hmm. And we're confident, and I'm sure once the city council reviews it, they'll see what the facts are, too, and they'll say, well, there's no reason for litigation.
So out of these 100 cities that you mentioned that have converted from at-large to district elections, have any of those done that on legal by being legally compelled to do it? Have any resisted it?
Yes, they have resisted. And in the cases where they resisted, they've lost their lawsuits, and this cost them a lot of money.
All of them?
To date, yes.
So no city that's tried to retain at-large elections has succeeded in court.
I don't believe so. Mm-hmm. Santa Monica is in litigation. They were in litigation for a long time. Finally, the Superior Court judge said no. All your arguments don't hold any water, and they were ordered. Now, they've appealed it, and so it's on appeal, so we'll see. But my hunch is that they're not going to win that.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that sort of tells the story. It's it feels to me like, this is my opinion, it feels to me like the city council will not have a lot of discretion on this. It seems like, based on what you've told us and the essential logic of it, it's hard to refute.
It is, because the act is written with pretty broad. You don't have to show that a minority person would get elected, because there's like 50% of the people in the district is a minority. Mm-hmm. All you have to show is that their vote might not have as much influence. That's a fairly broad. I'd like to go back to something if I could.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
I got some things to take care of here. We'll come back. We'll have plenty of time to cover all the points you want to cover, okay? Right. Gary Orton is with us, and Gary's representing the Napa County Progressive Alliance. We're talking about their proposal that the city switch from at-large city council seats to district-based city council seats. It would be a pretty significant change to the way things have always been in the city of Napa's politics. That might be the understatement of the day. As I mentioned, it's time for a break. More to come on this topic when we return in just a couple of minutes here on Wine Country Live. We are talking in this portion of the program with Gary Orton. Gary is representing the Napa County Progressive Alliance. He's on the steering committee for that organization. And among other things, the Progressive Alliance is talking about district elections for the city of Napa, which would change the city from the at-large representation that it's always had, as far as I know, to a district representation, meaning certain parts of town would have their own council member, and you would have something similar to what we see with the Board of Supervisors. Off the air, Gary, we were talking, and as you pointed out to me, just about every other elected organization uses some kind of a district structure.
In Napa County, yes. The Board of Supervisors, they run by district, as well as the Napa Valley College trustees. The Napa County Board of Education, and the Regional Park and Open Space District. Now, one agency that does not run by a district is the Napa Valley Unified School District. Now, they have to be a member of a district. They have to live in a district, and I'll call that an area, because they're already in a district, so they're in different areas. Mm-hmm. They have to live in a certain area. Interestingly enough, they have put on their agenda for this Thursday the idea of going to district elections, and so they've requested the county registrar of voters, John Tudor, to come in and talk to them about how they would go about redistricting. So it's in the air.
Yeah,
it goes along with the 100 cities. It goes along with the statistic that 2/3 of the cities in California with a population comparable to Napa have already abandoned at-large elections and have gone to district elections. So that is the trend. You can see the fairness in it, with neighborhoods able to have a much greater input, lessening the cost to candidates to run, making it much more democratic.
So the question that I'm sure some people listening have been wondering why I haven't asked yet, and it's one of the most fundamental questions around this whole topic. Having districts is fine. The question is, who draws the districts?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
Because we've all seen in the federal government the issue of gerrymandering. It's been out of control for decades. It's getting worse, not better. The ability for researchers to analyze, if we include these three homes on this block and not these other 10, we'll do better in this upcoming race. You only have to look at a few examples on maps of the horrific gerrymandering that's going on. What keeps a city from having that same problem over time? What keeps certain people from getting into power and then compelling districts to be changed so they can lock in their seat forever and so on? There's a lot of issues around that, right? Talk about that issue.
Yes, and we were talking about that off air, and it really has to do with statistics and getting demographics right. But not only that, it's making sure that people have the right to input during the map drawing process. And that's where the California Voters Rights Act has set up a standardized procedure, certainly with regard to boards of supervisors and cities, of what you have to do, how many hearings you have to have. There has to be an outreach program when you're going through this process to bring in affected communities, and translation services have to be provided. I mean, the statute sets this out because they've understood that there have been problems. We're not going to let the politicians do this. Yes, we are, but with plenty of input, with plenty of transparency, with the ability of people to bring their own maps in and have those considered. So this has been going on, this meaning the redrawings of maps and the litigation since the Civil Rights Act of 1960, Civil Rights of 1965.
Right.
California's statute, the California Voters Rights Act, opened that process up even a little bit more. And then the legislature has been refining that and saying, yeah, we need more hearings and putting the onus on the officials to go and have this outreach.
Mm-hmm. So the answer to the question is the city council itself, using input from the community, would draw the districts?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that we want to put on the table, and we have suggested this already to the city as part of this letter, is that there actually be commissions created to do this. And it's very possible, and it's by way of stipulation in other cities and other counties, they've done this. The law provides for the ability to create a commission. And we've even suggested we might want to have a county-wide commission of people that get some expertise in doing this and being able to go into various districts and help them redistrict. Because every 10 years, there has to be a redistricting. At least you have to look at the maps of every entity that does use district elections. That includes the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. They have to look at those maps every 10 years and adjust them to make sure that the districts are equal, not only equal in population, but that maintain, make sure that there's no...
integrity. They maintain integrity.
Integrity and making sure that minority communities are... have their ability to influence the mm-hmm. outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So that's connected to the census process, like all the other redistricting?
It is. And the county is already engaged in this process. Last week, the registrar of voters, Mr. Tudor, addressed the Board of Supervisors, alerting them as to what this process is. And let me just go one more thing, and that one of the other things that we have suggested might be on the table, in addition to creating a commission, is that consider whether or not the mayor of the city of Napa should be eliminated as to being voted on by the people at large, because that's another at large position. The California Voters Rights Act gives great powers to a city. They don't have to, this is a charter city, but the legislation says you don't have to get a charter amendment. You don't have to go and ask the voters to do this. The city council can make these decisions. They can make the decision to say we're no longer going to have an elected mayor. We're going to be like most of the cities in California. We'll have a five-member city council, and the city council will select the mayor. They could actually increase the number of seats. They don't have to be five. They could be seven. The legislation gives the council, the city council, the ability to do those things. Those are things we're asking the city council to take a look at and keep as open options. And we think mm-hmm. that certainly some of us on the steering committee believe that it would be much more democratic in having all of the city council people, including the mayor, be as by district. In other words, eliminating the elected mayor position.
Mm-hmm.
We're not demanding that. We're just saying put that on the table.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody formed any kind of opposition to this?
I think it's too early. I think they're probably still trying to figure out what the political lay of the land, and I think it's very encouraging that the Napa Valley Unified School District is on their own initiative, wants to consider having district elections.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that it's early when you're talking about a 45-day window. Usually if people had a concern, there would be action pushing back on this. Right, you know, your group, the Progressive Alliance, sent a letter. If there was serious opposition to this idea, somebody else would be sending a letter now too to oppose it. Do you know of that?
Oh, we know of none. No.
Yeah.
We haven't had any communication.
Nobody's spoken up or contacted your organization to say we're going to fight you on this?
No.
Okay.
Nor has the city responded.
Right. I did reach out to the mayor, by the way. I wanted to find out about getting somebody on to talk about it and get the conversation started. That's been a couple of weeks ago. And she said, we're looking at it, basically. And I'm sure they are. I'm sure that's occupying quite a bit of time right at the moment.
We encourage them to look at it.
Sure. If they've got a deadline. And most municipalities want to avoid court cases if they can, and so they're going to, you know, abide by and, you know, file something, right?
And I think there's a lot of education that has to, mm-hmm. to go on.
Mm-hmm. Now, play the devil's advocate for a moment. Some people might say, when you create districts, and we see this, of course, in Congress, and again, because largely of gerrymandering, it's gotten so much worse, but when you create districts, you actually have the potential to create more divisiveness, more of an us versus them feeling. And we see this in larger communities frequently, where someone is saying, look, the people I represent, it's just this neighborhood or these, you know, this part of town, is very different from saying the common good of the whole community, right? What about that? Do people bring that up as a potential stumbling block in this, that you actually create more of, you know, internecine struggle, as it were, among the community?
I think they try to bring it up, but if you really think about it, they're saying that when you get elected, you only have a very insular and very parochial view. My experience in politics is that some of that naturally goes on because you know who's going to vote for you and what you have to do. But on the other hand, I think most people of goodwill take a look at the big picture. And politics is a bit of horse trading. And it's compromise. So I think it's real false to say that by having citywide election, there's not going to be that horse trading anyway. Of course, there will be.
Yeah, fair enough. So what's the next step here for your organization?
To monitor very closely, to encourage the city council to study it very hard. I'm sure they are, and we're just waiting to hear from them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we'll, of course, be talking about it here on the show, and when the time is right, we'll have some representatives from the city to talk about it, and it becomes a good question, although it may be resolved before we really get into the heat of the council election this year, but it's a great question for all the candidates.
Yeah, and let me just say, too, that once they go through this process, and assuming that districts are created, and they'll have to be redone in the next when the census results come out, because what we're using now are the old census results.
Right.
So they'll have to be redone again. Mm-hmm. But, I think it's just, rather than talk about litigation, just look at what the trend is and what other cities have done, and how it's turned out. We're saying it's good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Just to game this out a little further, to clarify for me, does that calendar, the ticking clock of 45 days and 90 days, suggest that in November of 2020, that is it likely in your mind that the city of Napa will be voting in district elections for city council in, you know, what is 9 months, 10 months from now?
Yeah, very possible, yes. Mm-hmm. We would hope so.
Which would, in theory, also eliminate the mayor's race?
If that's, yes.
In theory?
That's a possibility.
Could
yes.
happen.
And, of course, we know that the mayor is stepping aside.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so people who are planning to run for office, who are declared to run for office today, have to be following this as well, because they could be running under either one of these situations in theory.
That's right. That's part of the political calculus.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Isn't it?
You know, as a candidate, as a campaign manager, as people involved in, you know, backing somebody, you have to have two plans, basically, right now.
Well, they'll know soon enough, most likely.
Say 3.5 months.
Yes.
There has to be that decision. So we're talking about February, March, April, May. Okay, so you'd have about a 6 month plus of knowing what your plan's going to be.
That's right.
Okay. This is interesting. I love stuff that's new like this. We have to figure it all out, you know.
Right, but this is an opportune time, especially with the mayor stepping aside. Mm-hmm. It's not like you're getting rid of a position that somebody
right,
has.
Right, right. And it would it be correct to say this is not something that's a campaign being waged against any individual or group of people or against the current council? It's not like it's not a recall. It's not an attack on anything the council has done.
Correct. And if you redistrict, it does not affect those who are currently in office. Even if that person is no longer in a district, the law says that person keeps the office until the end of the term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's pretty clear about that.
It's really interesting for people who are into rules and politics and legislation. It's fun. And, you know, potentially not as harmful as some things
right.
can be, right? Gary Orton from the Napa County Progressive Alliance, it was a pleasure talking with you. Can you say for me in about a minute, what does it mean to you to be part of a progressive organization? That word is being used today more than it has been maybe in the last 20 or 30 years. You used to hear people say they were a progressive, and it just sort of disappeared for a long time. What does it mean to be a progressive?
Interesting question. I'm a history student as well, and I'm writing in a fiction back in the progressive era. I had a great-grandfather that was a leader of the Liberal Party in Utah Territory, studying a lot about that. It's when it's for a less authoritarian society. It's for more bottom-up. It's for grassroots. It's for people making decisions. It's for less corporate influence, less money influence, and that's, if you look back at the turn of the 20th century, that's when you're talking about the octopus and the railroads and the big business, big corporations, and people having no control whatsoever. And my great-grandfather then left Utah, went to Oregon, and part of the initiative referendum recall effort there, which is even before California, was successful in getting direct election of senators before it ever became law, and helped a guy get elected that way, and became his chief of staff when he got elected and went back to Washington, D.C. So it's in my blood, progressivism. He was a progressive back at the turn of the century. So that's what it's about. It's about grassroots and bottom up.
Very good. Gary Orton, thanks for being our guest here today.
Thank you, Barry.
That's going to do it for Wine Country Live for today. Thanks for listening.